Before we go any further, I want to thank you for the vacation that we had last week. It was a restful and relaxing time, and it was well needed, and we're very grateful to you for allowing us to go. The place that we went in Mexico was essentially a collection of tents on a beach underneath thatched roof, what they call palapas, And then that building over on the left is a kind of a communal dining hall, a maximum of 25 or 30 people. No electricity, no phones, no television, yeah, plenty of hammocks. It was wonderful. And as we ate dinner and interacted with the other guests, the word got out that I was a pastor. And as a result, as you can imagine, I had many conversations with people about that. And I would say maybe 50 specific conversations about spiritual things with people. And what startled me, although it shouldn't, it happens frequently, is I did not meet a single person who had a clue about Jesus. Not one. You know, some of the people I met were just hostile to all religion in general. One lady I met was just seething as she found out I was a pastor. "I hate religion," she said. And I said, "Good, so do I." You know, but and if I'd been quick enough, I would have said, "So does Jesus." But because that was who he had the trouble with, is the religious people. But I hate all these religions, and she went on and on about the trouble that religion has caused, some people had twisted experiences with Christian form of religion. Spoke to one guy that I came very close to. We hit it off very well, and we talked a lot. And his grandfather was a pastor in a kind of a fundamentalist Christian church where he brought forth hellfire and brimstone every Sunday, and then on Monday he would philander and cheat his way through the week. And this guy, roughly my age, has had nothing to do with Jesus ever since. And then there was, I would say, most of them that thought that all religions are essentially the same. And you pick your flavor and go down that road, whatever you want to do, and you'll wind up at the same place. In other words, the credibility of Jesus, his authenticity, is up for grabs in this world. With all the different possibilities for religions that exist in this world, how is it that Jesus and his claims and his message are going to stand out in such a way that people will steer away from empty, human, made-up religion and wind up with Jesus and come to life with the truth? How's that going to happen? If there's so many options, how is Jesus going to stand out as a shining example of something that's radically different? Well, thankfully, he had a plan for that. He had a tool to convince the world, a strategy to convince the world of his authenticity, that he really was the one who was sent from God. And his tool, his strategy, is you and me. It's we, his followers. And We see this reflected in the final prayer of Jesus. You'll remember we've been going through the teaching section of at the very end of Jesus' life in the Gospel of John. And at the end of that, he prays. He prays for himself. "Lord, here's how I see my situation from your point of view. Do whatever you need to do to me so you can do whatever you want to do through me." And then he prays for his disciples. "Lord, here's their situation from your point of view. Do whatever you need to do to them so that you can do whatever you want to do through them." And then he prays for you and for me. And in that prayer, he makes it very clear that his strategy to convince the world of the difference between all of the man-made religions in the world and the one true Son of God is you and me. Let's turn to that and open to the 17th chapter of John, verse 20. Jesus prays these words at the very end, just before he's arrested and crucified. My prayer is not for them, my disciples, alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. It's Jesus praying for you, for me. And he prays that all of them may be one, Father. Just as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me. May they be brought to complete unity, to let the world know that you sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. Father, I want those you have given to me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you. And they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them and that I myself may be in them. Amazing prayer. But to fully understand it, there's a few words that we really need to understand clearly. And the first one of those words is sent. Jesus' purpose for this prayer, his prayer request per se, is that the world might come to understand and come to faith in the fact that God has sent him. That's the purpose of all this, that people will understand that he's been sent. Now, Jesus is not name-dropping here. He's not like these people you see on television who want you to know that that they're best friends with Tom Cruise or somebody, and so instead of saying Tom Cruise, they say Tom. And they let you know, they work the conversation around so that you know that they've been over to dinner at Tom's house or something. This is not name-dropping or an ego move on Jesus' part. It's about being sent. It's about having the authority to do God's purpose on earth, to come with the purpose of God in hand and perform it because he's authorized to do so. It's about his authenticity, his credibility, the difference in who he is. For example, if a parent wants to send somebody to the school to pick up his or her children, the school, if it's on the ball, will not release those children until it proves to itself that this person is authorized, that they've actually been sent by the parent. And so maybe they'll ask for a signed form authorizing them to pick up the kids, and they'll compare the signature and make sure that they really have been sent. And if they can't prove it, they're not going to release the kids. But if they can prove it, if they know that that person truly has been sent, then they will cooperate with what that person has been sent to do. And that's what Jesus is saying. This whole prayer request is so that the world might cooperate with what he has been sent to do because they understand he truly has been sent. And so how does that happen? Well, that brings up the next word that we need to fully understand. It's the word one. It happens through his followers, the ones who come to faith in him through the message or the logos of the disciples as they pass that on generation and generation through times of good times and bad times, war and pestilence and all this kind of stuff. The message just keeps coming until eventually here, 2,000 years later, we've got it and we've come to faith with it. And Jesus prays for us in verse 21 that all of us may be one. And then in verse 22, that they may be one as we are one. And then in verse 23, may they be brought to complete unity, oneness. Literally, may they be perfected in one. And that's the difference that people are to see in us, to prove who Jesus is, his authenticity. But get it, we need to understand what he means by the word one. Most of the time when I've heard this passage referred to, the message that's being brought says that the Christian church, capital C, needs to become united so that there's no divisions among us, and that we hold hands with one another and present a united front to the world, and that'll be so flabbergasting to the world that they'll get it. Now, while that may be true, that's not what Jesus means here. For example, I heard a sermon by one of my favorite authors. Actually, I read it. And I really love this guy. I mean, I love his insight, and the way he writes is just a real inspiration to me. But when he came to this passage, he referred to the movie Gladiator. You remember Russell Crowe in that movie Gladiator was unfairly imprisoned as a gladiator, and the time came when they were going to recreate the Battle of Carthage or some such thing, and the gladiators were all out in the ring milling around, and they were about to turn loose this crack team of bloodthirsty troops to come and cut them down to pieces, and Russell Crowe gathers them all together in the middle of the ring, and he says, "Whatever comes through that gate, stick together." Remember that? And then the soldiers came through the gate, and with the exception of one guy who didn't pay attention, everybody stuck together, and they beat the soldiers and turned the tides on what was supposed to happen. And this author says that's what we must be, because Jesus prayed for us to be one. Now, I'm not denying that unity among believers is a really, really important thing. Not denying that. But is that what Jesus means here? No. That's not what he's saying. How do I know? He tells us what he means here. He says, "May all of them be one like this. Father, you are in me, and I am in you. May they be in us." That's what he means by being one. He repeats that over and over and over again. In the same way that Jesus is in the Father and the Father is in him, may we be in them and may they be in us. That's what he means by being perfected in one or in unity. Now, Jesus lived like this himself. He said in chapter 5 that the Son can do nothing on his own. He can only do what the Father does through him, or what he sees the Father doing. He says in chapter 14, "If you have seen me, you have seen the Father." It's not an arrogant statement. It simply means that everything he does expresses the life of the Father living through him. He said, "Even my words are not my own. Rather, it's the Father who lives in me." And then this whole concept of Jesus in the Father and the Father in him, and now he's praying that we might be in them and they might be in us, that should be very familiar, because it's one of two themes that Jesus has been hammering and repeating over and over again in these last several chapters of John, where he's been urgently instructing his disciples what to do and how to get it done. And the how to get it done portion has been, stay in me. Make your home, make your life in me, like a branch makes its life in the vine. And then let my life flow through you and produce fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. You must stay connected to me and be absorbed into me so that I can be absorbed into you and my life can live through you. I didn't have a prop for this, but now I do. This idea of being one is like putting a sponge into a bucket and saturating it with the water. You put the sponge in there, and it's no longer what it was. And now it's in the water, and the water is in the sponge. And you pick it up, and what happens? It drips with water because it's saturated. Jesus said, "May they be like that. I in you, you in me, may they be in us. May I be in them." So that everywhere they go, it's not the person that you see, but it's my life living through the person, Jesus says. May they be so saturated that the world will know that you sent me. A number of years ago, Howard Hendricks was sitting on an airplane waiting on the tarmac, one of these interminable delays where they take the plane out from the gate, put it on the tarmac, and make it sit there for an hour. And the passengers in the plane were getting cranky, as all those other people tend to do. And Howard was watching this situation develop, and he noticed that there was one flight attendant who maintained her composure. And she responded to hostility with patience and grace and gentleness and just really stood out as a shining example of somebody who's really handling it this in the right way. And so when the plane took off, finally, he called her over when she had a moment, and he said to her, "I've been really impressed to see how you were so different when everybody was losing it back there on the tarmac. You exuded patience and grace and love and charity and these kind of things. And I would like to write a letter to the airline to commend you to them." And she said, "But I don't work for the airline." And he said, "You don't?" He said, "No, I work for Jesus Christ." She said, "Before I left this morning, my husband and I got down on our knees and we prayed that Jesus would show himself through me." That's being one. I and you and me, may they be in us, so saturated that the world can see the difference. You know, with all these religions, they represent themselves as well, here's the paradise that we hold out that maybe you'd like, if you understand it. Maybe they call it nirvana, maybe they call it a better resurrection into a different reincarnated life or something, you know, whatever it is. They all have this good thing that they say, well, here's what you need. And then they say, here's how you get it. First you jump through this hoop, then you jump through that hoop, then you go to a pilgrimage, then you jump through these 12 hoops. And if you do this all exactly right, then you can get this thing that we're holding out for you. So if you agree with that, if you understand that you want what we have to offer, you'll jump through our hoops. That's every religion in this world. You remember the Muslims in the Middle East that trampled one another in their urgent zeal to throw a stone at the wall of Satan just a few weeks ago. Because they had to get that done at the right time or else it wouldn't work. That would be a hoop not jumped through if their rock didn't hit the wall. But Jesus doesn't present himself that way. He sends you out and he lives and shines through you. The difference between every religion in the world and somebody who is following Jesus Christ should be as evidently different as all of the packages of seeds with all the pretty pictures on the front of the packages that you see in the store should be as different from that as a seed that has been planted, is died, and now has the nutrients and the life that is contained in the soil flowing up through it and is sprouting and producing fruit. That's what being one means. And the fruit is showing the character and the purpose and the identity of God in a humanly understandable way. It's like being a God monitor. We talked about how you can't see what's going on in a computer unless you have a monitor to show you in a humanly recognizable and understandable way what's going on in there. Same thing with Jesus. He said, "You've seen me, you've seen God." Same thing with you and me. And he gets to that in verse 22 where he says, "I have given them the glory that you gave me." Now you can't understand this unless you understand what he means when he says glory. And you'll remember at the beginning of this prayer, Jesus used that word glory or glorify in two different ways. And eventually he meant the full magnificence and splendor and blinding brilliance of who he is, glorified in perfection in heaven and the new kingdom and the new creation to come. But that's not what he means here, and it's not what he meant at the beginning of his prayer when he said, "Father, the time has come, glorify your Son." And what he, you know, a blunt translation of that is, "Father, release it so that the circumstances they're putting together to crucify me may come to pass. Let me be crucified." Because in the crucifixion, Jesus did the penultimate act that showed what he was doing through every day of his life, every act, every word of his life. It was showing the people who God is. It's showing the people that God so loved the world that he gave his son. And the response to that is hallelujah. That's the glory of Jesus, is expressing the character of God by emptying himself and coming down and becoming like a human being, and then taking the lowest place and then going in indignation to the cross and giving himself because he loves us. And you'll remember that this, too, is the second, you know, it's the second theme that he's been hammering on over and over again. He had two themes, what to do and how to get it done. Well, this is the what to do part, because he says to his disciples, the same way I loved you, you love one another. That's what to do. It's astonishing to me that when Jesus left these 11 guys with the task of spreading the gospel throughout the whole world, he did not say one word to them about a building committee, running a good nursery, we'd go on and on with that, how to run a worship service, didn't say anything about that. He said, love one another. And the standard for that love was the cross. There's no better love than to lay down your life for those you love. And Jesus said, like that, you love one another. And now he says, I have given them the glory that you gave me. I've given them the same assignment to express who you are, Father, who I am, through humble service and love, self-sacrificially. Love one another. Now, of course, as we've said many times as we went through these chapters, you cannot do that, not like Jesus loved us, unless you're saturated in him and his life flows through you. That's the only way to do it. You can't pretend about this. And so these two themes are intertwined, as they have been every chapter thus far. They depend on one another. You cannot love without the life. You cannot have the life without the love. It is kind of like a Mobius strip of themes. And here in this verse, it's the same way. He says, I've given them the glory so that they may be saturated in us, because that propels us to be saturated in him if we attempt to love someone as he did. And so what the world sees is nothing less than the life of Jesus Christ shining through our equipment, expressed in acts of humble service and real self-sacrificial love. That's the deal. That's what he's praying for, so that the world might know how authentic he is. Now, this is upside down from everything we learn in the world. The world says, don't present somebody else, present yourself. And from day one, almost, we're taught how to present ourselves in the world. You know, it's the clothes that you wear. It's the way you do your hair. It's putting on one of these. It's how you talk. You know, there's got to be a reason for whole vast segments of our culture to put a baseball hat on crooked and talk in unintelligible slang. The reason is, it's how you present yourself. This morning in the paper, as I was thumbing through it just before I came over here, there's an ad from Dillard's with one word on the page, image. Full page ad. It's a picture of two women dressed in camouflage outfits. Image. It's how you present yourself. And Jesus says, I don't want them to see you. I want them to see me. And here's how you get it done. Acts of humble service. As an example, a few years back, two famous women died within a few days of each other. Both of these women were admired in the world. Both of these women were looked up to. Both of these women were nice. Both of these women did acts of charity in the world. But they were radically different in how they were seen. I'm talking about Princess Diana and Mother Teresa. When you saw Princess Diana, who did you see? Princess Diana. You saw her hair, you saw her eyes, you saw her dress, you saw her new hat, saw the demure pose, you know, the shyness, the heart-wrenching angst of a troubled relationship, all this stuff. She was loved, she did nice things, but that's who you saw. But I would contend when people saw Mother Teresa, it was not about her habit. Not the habit that she wore, but the habit that she lived. You saw Jesus Christ live through her and love people unconditionally. Did she have the right doctrine? No way. She had all the right answers? No way. But she was saturated in Jesus. She was one. And he lived through her. And when people saw Mother Teresa, they had to make a decision about Jesus. That's the plan. Now, this is not going to be an easy thing to do. There are going to be times when those who are shining with Jesus are persecuted because they're radically different. There's nothing the same. It's upside down from everything that we learn in the world. And so Jesus knows full well how troubling this is going to be, how much struggle it's going to be, how much persecution and sometimes death that will come to those who truly understand this glory and practice it. And so he focuses our attention through this prayer on our destiny. He says, Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory. The glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. And the word in that verse that we need to understand is the word want. It's the language of speaking your last will and testament. And Jesus says, here's my last will and testament, Father, that all those who receive this assignment of glory through humble service and reflect my life through them, because they live in me and I live in them, that one day they would be with me where I am. And that they might see my full glory, my heavenly glory. This is the second use of the word glory. The glory that causes a best friend of Jesus to fall flat on his face in fear and trembling. And the glory that lifts him back up to his feet where he can sing and dance and weep with joy. The glory that, you know, behold, he comes riding on the clouds, shining like the sun at the trumpet call. That glory. That's Jesus' last will and testament for us. That we'll be with him then. And if we understand that, there's nothing that will stop us in this world. No persecution, no rejection, no nothing. Because we've got our eye on the prize, on the destiny, the last will and testament of Jesus. So that's it. May they be one. May be saturated in us. That through acts of humble service, the world will know that you sent me. If you're understanding that, perhaps you're feeling the way I do when I understand that, and it comes and goes, I get a little troubled by that. And I start to think along these lines, how in the world can Jesus take a weak and twisted person like me and ever get that done? How's that possible? I look at the task, the assignment, and I think the only thing I could possibly do is disappoint him. And if you've ever felt that way, look at verse 25 and 26. He ends his prayer like this, Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you. And they know that you have sent me. I've made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them. And that I myself may be in them. To say it bluntly, we don't do it. Jesus does it. He does it by revealing day after day after day, minute after minute in our life, who God is and what he's up to. And conforming us to his likeness, little by little, in incremental steps, with increasing glory, increasing ability to share his love. And God's love is in us, increasingly and increasingly, so that it can flow out through us. The one who began a good work in us will continue it. It is God who acts in us to will and to act according to His purpose. It's the one who He's the one who does this. And so if you're feeling discouraged, forget about that. Forget about trying to please Him. Trust Him. He told us in this prayer, He will do it. And what will He do? Make us so saturated in Him that when people see us coming and they see the acts of loving service, they won't see us, they'll see Him. Now, how do we remember this? Well, maybe you've been wondering what's in this bag. Fact is, you can't know what's in this bag unless I take it out of the bag and show you. Why not? Because this is a paper bag. And it's presenting itself with graphics to the world. This bag says, I am Eddie Bauer. And I am upscale. Right? And I have the money to put this kind of printing. This is no brown paper bag. This is an orange paper bag that looks, it's printed to look like a bag. This is kind of interesting. And it says, I've been established since 1920, sucker. But if you want to be like me, give me your money. And I'll give you things to put on to make you upscale too. That's what this bag says. But in here, I have a different bag, a plastic bag. And you know what's in there. You see this. You don't see the bag. You see the bread. Maybe that's enough said. When you go to the store, just as a way to remember this, and the clerk says to you, paper or plastic? Let that reorient you. Remember Jesus' prayer and get soaked in Him and join Him in revealing His authenticity to the world, His glory through acts of loving service. Let Him see the bread of life.